WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. An update on a fatal shooting and stabbing at a Reston home yesterday morning. Fairfax County Police Chief Kevin Davis says two 911 calls came in from the phone of an au pair who lived with the family. In the second, a man said he shot and killed a man who stabbed his wife.
We have to prove it. Who exactly shot and killed our male decedent, Joseph Ryan, and who exactly stabbed Christine Banfield to death. We know what our 911 caller, the husband, told us, but we have a lot of work to do to substantiate that claim.
He thinks Ryan knew the family. He didn't break into the home, according to Davis, but they don't know what he was doing there. A year after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, support for the country remained strong here in the U.S. Hundreds of people gathered at the Russian embassy for a candlelight vigil last night. There will be a rally this afternoon at the Lincoln Memorial.
We are just hoping to show American people that we remember that day. We will never forget it. We condemn Russia.
Ukraine native and president of D.C.-based nonprofit United Help Ukraine, Marina Baiduk, says they also want to bring attention back to Ukraine.
I think it's important to remind the world that the war is not over.
And while Americans support Ukraine, Iran is lending a hand to Russia.
Iran's support for the Russian invasion of Ukraine is expanding. That according to John Kirby of the National Security Council, who says Iran has sent artillery and tank rounds to Russia, with Russia returning the favor with missiles, electronics, air defense, and even could provide fighter jets. Kirby believes the decision by Iran to spend billions on Russian military equipment is a concern.
But certainly it's not good for the Middle East, as Iran will seek to benefit from their cooperation with Russia.
Kirby says. Ryan Schmelz, Fox News.
We'll likely see something we really haven't seen this winter today, snow. 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff says there could be a coating in the grass. Roads should be fine. Some people in California who never see snow are also getting a taste of winter. Heavy snow and rain pounded the state yesterday. The National Weather Service warned of cold, snowy, rainy weather for much of the state lasting through today. To the east of Los Angeles, in Hesperia, people were rushing into a convenience store to get supplies.
Beautiful. Cold, but beautiful. This is my first snowstorm, I guess.
Man, I love the weather, man. I'm gonna get another bag of hot Cheetos so I can warm up. You eat these, you'll get warm. Trust me.
A flood watch continues in L.A. this afternoon. A spike in fentanyl youth overdoses in Montgomery County prompts a second community forum this morning on the deadly synthetic opioid. County Executive Mark Elrich.
Since the start of school year, 5 deaths have been blamed on fentanyl use, and many more have needed emergency anti-overdose medication, which we know commonly as Narcan.
The forum starts at 9:30 at Northwood High School. WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Knicks. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Georgetown and Wisconsin Avenue, both directions are shut down for a police investigation. You'll find it between Calvert Street and Edmund Street on 295, 395, and 695 in the district. All lanes are clear. No crashes or construction slowing you down. Virginia side of the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop are at speed. 66 in Fairfax County, no delays in either direction. On 95 southbound at Quantico, there is a crash. Left lane is blocked after 619. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend with a little bit of light rain and snow possible mid-morning to early afternoon. A coating in the grass, not out of the question, but no real big issues for the roadways. Highs today only in the upper 30s. Tonight, cold, maybe some patchy fog. Tomorrow, back into some sunshine near 60. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff.
Right now, 33 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Hour 2 of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Friday marked the one-year commemoration. I don't even want to call it an anniversary. The one-year commemoration of the Ukraine war. And, John, after a year, obviously, we see the conflict continues. We see changes in Russia's policies toward the U.S. We see changes in China's relationship with Russia and the U.S. So put it in perspective for us, as now it's China and Russia.
It certainly is. And, indeed, as the speculation begins that China will help Russia in its effort to expand its control over a nation that has been independent now since the end of the Cold War, we are seeing perhaps the most unpredictable and bloody crisis in Europe since Hitler went into Poland in September 1939. And again, that followed broken promises, attempts at healing, attempts at peace treaties. But in the end, the conflict just spilled over. And that's what's happened in Ukraine. An estimated 200,000 Russian troops are dead. And there were reports of, after failing to secure the airport in Ukraine and set the stage for a quick takeover, Russians wound up shooting down their own fighter planes. Now they reportedly have a shortage of pilots to do this. We saw the Battle of Kherson, and we saw many Russian-occupied territories simply abandoned. At this point, Russia controls an estimated 17% of Ukraine, down from the early days of the Russo-Ukraine War. On the Ukraine side, President Volodymyr Zelensky has become kind of a folk hero in the United States. Winston Churchill in a T-shirt is what Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell calls the former comedian and now the man of the hour in Ukraine. At the same time, he has his problems. In both his address to Congress and his meetings with leaders of the European Union, President Zelensky stressed that he needs planes and that he needs weapons to continue to fight the Russians, who are not giving up and indeed releasing criminals, conscripting them and telling them, you go in and fight. It looked for a while in the early days of the war, 1 year ago, as though Vladimir Putin would wrap it up, as he did his seizure of Crimea, a part of Ukraine, in 2014. It didn't work that way, and yet President Zelensky and the Ukrainians have not been able to throw the knockout punch. And at this point, it is a stalemate, and it could be a slow-motion Vietnam. One other thing. While Zelensky is a hero to many, in his own country, he is seen increasingly as a figure of authoritarianism. He's used militia groups with neo-Nazi leanings to fight the Russians, and he has clashed increasingly with his very popular chief of the armed forces, General Valery Zaluzhnyi. So, to be continued is all we can say.
The House Judiciary Committee held hearings in Yuma, Arizona. Unfortunately, none of the Democratic members of the House Judiciary Committee showed up. And again, just another indication of the polarization and just the intense conflict between the Democrat and Republican parties right now. John, have you seen this type of thing before where, you know, they're even doing committee meeting hearings in other cities and members don't even show up?
The idea of boycotting committees by one side is something that's relatively new. One can go back to some of the investigative committees of recent years and find that everyone participated. In the early days of the Senate Watergate Committee, Republicans felt very dismissive that there even was an investigation of alleged wrongdoing over what some called a third-rate burglary. Nonetheless, the Republican members of the committee participated, as they did in the Iran-Contra hearings and in the impeachment proceedings of President Bill Clinton. Republicans, feeling they were mistreated and not having the membership they wanted, boycotted the January 6th committee hearings. Oops, except for former representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, both of whom have been since shunned by their own party and are no longer in Congress. This is the Democrats' reply to the Republicans' treatment of the January 6th committee, and it's a new phenomenon. This reporter says it'll be a lasting phenomenon.
John, our 39th president, Jimmy Carter, in hospice care at this point in Georgia. Jimmy Carter was probably not in your top five or top 10 presidents of all time, but may very well be up in the top three former presidents of all time. With all of the work that he did with Habitat for Humanity, the Carter Center, and the many activities that he did post-presidency. Give us your perspective on Jimmy Carter's presidency.
He was by no means a great president, but he was a good man. And to many, that's much more important than being a great leader in the political arena. Jimmy Carter was someone who came to the White House because he started early, worked hard, and overcame more established politicians. He was elected primarily because he was a Democrat and out of rejection of the Republicans after Richard Nixon's resignation over the Watergate scandal. Few people remember that it took one state, Mississippi, and on which the election hung, and it made Carter the 39th president. In office, the brilliant engineer and graduate of Annapolis showed that while he was a master of details, it was the outcome and the vision in which he was lacking. Unemployment and inflation were in double digits. NBC reported that around the world, there was less freedom than at any time in modern history. And indeed, the Russians in the old Soviet Union, sensing something was amiss in Washington, D.C., launched the invasion of Afghanistan in the late 1970s. And we saw loyal allies of the U.S., like the Shah of Iran and Nicaragua's president, Anastasia Somoza, deposed. And governments came to power with a common denominator. They hated America. Jimmy Carter was beaten soundly by Ronald Reagan and was not even 60 years old. He had a long life ahead of him, and perhaps the late Governor Mario Cuomo of New York said it best. He was America's greatest ex-president. And indeed, the work he did with Habitat for Humanity, the serious books that he wrote, including children's books, his outreach to the Jewish community after what many considered anti-Semitic remarks and hostility to Israel. All of these are things that can serve as lessons to us and to people who sometimes find they have nothing to do. In that sense, Jimmy Carter will be remembered not for what he did in the White House, but for what he did as Citizen Carter. One more thing. His marriage to childhood sweetheart Rosalind Smith lasted 75 years, longer than any president in history. Out of it came four children, 22 grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Overall, that's pretty good, and it's pretty good when your family's around you in your final days.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, thank you so much as always.
Always a pleasure, Rick, and we're keeping President Carter in our prayers.
7:17 now on the Saturday Morning Update. Cheryl Atkison coming up next. Then we're back also with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. Right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Maryland's side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, inner loop and outer loop are clear. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. Now into Prince George's County. Traveling between the two beltways on the VW Parkway or 95, no delays being reported in either direction. And in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound lanes are clear, and at the Bay Bridge, you got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend with a little bit of light rain and snow possible mid-morning to early afternoon. A coating in the grass, not out of the question, but no real big issues for the roadways. The only concern, higher elevations out west. Highs today only in the upper 30s. Tonight, cold, maybe some patchy fog in spots. Tomorrow, back into some sunshine, mid and upper 50s to near 60. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandergraff.
30 degrees now in the nation's capital, 718 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson joins us each week. Of course, she is the host of Full Measure. You can catch that tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock on ABC7. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
With the recent Chinese balloon incident, it's become more and more upfront news about how China is spying on us, also purchasing land around the country. But we're not the only America where they're doing that.
Yeah, you know, by the way, on Full Measure in the near future, we'll be doing a story on the land purchases here. But this week, we asked Scott Thuman to go to Latin America and expose all of the purchases they're making, the infrastructure they're building, the bridges, the public transportation. They're, in essence, buying influence and power all around the globe, but right in our own backyard in South and Central America through this plan they have to put infrastructure all over, basically in, you know, Africa and South America and Europe and all kinds of places. And according to Scott Thuman and the experts he spoke to, we really don't seem to have a firm plan to compete. I mean, the way I see it, we're giving basically cash foreign aid to these countries, many of them sending their poorest to come here illegally. And we look kind of like saps, because what's China doing? They're investing in a way that grows their power and influence by building this infrastructure and the highways and the roads and the bridges.
You know, when you think about Washington and they come in, they maybe spend a little time in Congress, then they move over to be a lobbyist and make a lot of money. And that's one thing in politics. But when it comes into other fields like science, are there similar kinds of situations?
Absolutely. There are all kinds of way that our public government scientists are making money and potentially even being influenced by industry in ways that are invisible to most of us. And we'll be talking about a really interesting deep dive that a watchdog called Open the Books has done, looking at government scientists at the National Institutes of Health and how they're getting paid royalty funds from pharmaceutical companies and other private companies for the work that they've done on our dime while we're paying them. I think one of the ironies of this is, you know, we hire them and pay them to make discoveries and to do important things, and then these discoveries or inventions are sold, or the patents are sold to private companies who then return royalties, not to you and me, the people who funded the work that was done, but in many instances directly to the personal bank account of the scientist involved. So you'll hear the founder of Open the Books talk about how this presents all kinds of conflicts of interest. And when they tried to get this data, by the way, Associated Press had done something on this maybe a decade ago. They keep a lot of these records, which should be public, really secretive. And Open the Books sued. And when they ultimately got the records, a lot of names are redacted and details are redacted. But, you know, I think a lot of people saw the Senator Rand Paul questioning Dr. Anthony Fauci about this, how much money he gets from royalties. He said very little, but he wouldn't give details. Basically, he said, we don't have to tell you. And it's true. You know, they're exempt under the law from having to tell us certain things, and they're allowed to make money this way, which would not be allowed in most private industry arrangements. Mm.
You know, during the Trump administration, much was made about President Trump's relationship with Angela Merkel, the German chancellor. And, of course, we just saw President Biden in Ukraine and in Poland. And when you were there in Berlin, you found out a lot more about that relationship between former President Trump and Angela Merkel.
Yes, I spoke to a biographer for Merkel who's written of her. She was considered by many to be the most powerful woman in the world before she left office in the last couple of years. She was one of the longest serving women ever, women world leaders, I think second only to Margaret Thatcher in Great Britain. But I was fascinated. I don't know if people remember, Trump went around at one point saying as president that he had sent Angela Merkel a white flag. And so I asked the biographer what that was all about. And he had said, Trump at the time, that Merkel's dealings with Russia, to count on them for oil through this new pipeline, was really going to put them in a precarious state and make them beholden to Russia in a way that would be damaging down the road. And he sent her a white flag of surrender to symbolize that. And everybody kind of made fun of him for doing that. Well, he was right. And to look back at the things he warned Merkel about, he was spot on with the energy. And that's part of the reason that she finds herself no longer in office today. But she is fondly remembered. This is sort of the story we're doing with her biographer, by many people. She's a big influential figure, considered a force of stability at Germany at a time when many nations were not seeing as much stability. But part of what I thought was most interesting about my interview with the biographer is Donald Trump's, in essence, what made her last couple of years in office. Her rivalry with him, her adversarial relationship with him. So it's really interesting to hear the biographer describe what she thought of Trump and how he kind of helped put her on the global radar with the relationship that they had.
Great stories. Tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, is Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:24, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. And as I mentioned, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up. We've got KT McFarland coming up. Quick break, and then we're going to come back. And we've got some audio from Ron DeSantis. We played some audio from three other Republican candidates this morning. And while he has yet to announce, a lot of speculation around Ron DeSantis. And he had an interesting press conference, and that's coming up.
News Talk 105.9
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update, and Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has really gotten under the skin of a lot of progressives, obviously the mainstream and liberal media. And he held a press conference on Thursday. He unveiled several new proposals that would crack down on illegal immigration, and it would be very much Florida's response in contrast to the border crisis handling by the Biden administration. And we had a couple of clips from the event, and I thought this would be of interest to you. Governor DeSantis in Florida.
You see other places, San Francisco, New York City, now Washington, D.C., once illegal or actually foreigners to vote, illegal aliens, or even like diplomats. Like, are you going to have some diplomat from the CCP voting in D.C. elections? I mean, it's insane what they're trying to do.
And that's not all he had to say.
We don't allow that. And we've actually, with our election crime unit that I instituted with the legislators' help last year, you've actually seen illegal aliens prosecuted in Florida now for voting illegally, because some of them say no one asked me. They just said I could vote, so I signed up and did it.
And now we have one more just where he lays out a little more information on the legislation he's proposing.
Our bill will require when you register to vote that you affirm or swear under penalty of perjury that you are a United States citizen. And so if you check that box, and you're not, then you're opening yourself up to prosecution. And we need to make sure that we want all citizens here that want to vote, but we don't want anybody here voting illegally. And if you're not a citizen of this country, you should not be voting in our elections.
So that is Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. Now, you know, CPAC is coming up this week. WMAL will have full coverage from CPAC. We'll talk about it with KT McFarland coming up. But it's going to be very interesting at CPAC because the former president, Donald Trump, is on the agenda. And obviously so many of the Republican hopefuls for 2024 will be speaking as well. So we'll have a preview coming up for you on CPAC. It's on the way. So stay with us here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The investigation continues today into the killings of a man and woman in a Reston home yesterday morning. Fairfax County Police Chief Kevin Davis says a man called 911 and said he'd shot a man identified as Joseph Ryan, who stabbed his wife, Christine Banfield.
We're dedicated to accomplishing that work, to hold the person or persons accountable for this vicious, brutal attack.
He says the husband and au pair were present and involved, but said they're working to determine what that means. They're also trying to figure out what Ryan was doing in the house. Davis says he knew the family and did not break in. A vigil for Ukraine held at the Russian embassy in D.C. last night on the one-year anniversary of the invasion. Ukraine native and president of D.C.-based nonprofit United Help Ukraine, Marina Baiduk.
Many Ukrainians in Ukraine or abroad will tell you the same, that moment has changed our life to before and after.
This afternoon, a rally will be held at the Lincoln Memorial. Some snow could start falling in the DMV later this morning and wrap up early this afternoon. Meteorologists don't expect it to stick to roads. Snowy weather also in the forecast in California today, after some parts of the state saw a rare snowstorm yesterday. WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Knicks. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Starting in Virginia, on the Beltway, I looked at the cameras. Lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Now to 66 in Fairfax County. No crashes or construction eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, southbound in Quantico, there is a crash. Left lane is blocked after 619. On the northbound side of 95, no delays between Fredericksburg and the D.C. Beltway. And in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are at the posted speed limit. Nothing slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend with a little bit of light rain and snow possible mid-morning to early afternoon. A coating in the grass, not out of the question, but no real big issues for the roadways. Highs today only in the upper 30s. Tonight, cold, maybe some patchy fog. Tomorrow, back into some sunshine near 60. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandergraff.
Right now, 35 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues. It's 7:34. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, president of the London Center for Policy Research. He's also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast, author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
Obviously, yesterday marking the first anniversary of the war in Ukraine, President Biden committing $2 billion in aid, in military aid, and $10 billion in humanitarian aid. He is stopping short of committing any F-16s. He said, quote, not for now. So he didn't rule it out in the future, but for the moment, ruling out providing any F-16s to Ukraine. With what you've seen of his plan, is this enough for Ukraine to push Russia out of Ukraine, or is this enough to keep it going for another year?
If it showed up tomorrow, sure, but it's not. And the two factors which indicate that this is going to be useless is the time that the Pentagon just admitted yesterday it's going to take. These things have to be built, Rick. It's not going to come out of stocks. We're trying to rebuild our own military stocks for our own purposes. So we're talking timelines of no less than 3 months, often more than six to nine months, just to get some of this stuff done. So, no, it's not going to show up when it's needed. Secondly, the just complete feckless appearance of Joe Biden and the way he portrayed all of the support. I was just appalled to watch him. Both in country, it's like he's reading teleprompters. There's no enthusiasm. There's no power behind his words talking about the support. So I can tell you that just from the appearance of it, And one of the things I'm going to say the audience may not like, but it's true, he's being judged by his ability to manage domestic policy as much as foreign policy. And his failure to recognize Ohio as an issue and actually going overseas has been something that has been noted by the Russians and other foreign press. So just the lack of, his leadership, real leadership, is being shown to be something that is encouraging others to basically not recognize the United States. And this impacts NATO too, then, Rick, because NATO's going to say, why should we do stuff? This guy's really not in it. Everything he did yesterday at NATO, it just didn't resonate. So I just don't think any of what he's saying, any of the support that's being offered, is going to have any net positive impact on the conflict if you're talking about Ukraine trying to win.
Let me ask you about what we need to be watching in the weeks and likely months ahead. We've heard so much about Kyiv, and what about another city to watch or region to watch in terms of the tipping point, which way this thing will go? What are we looking for there?
So there's a number of really interesting and ongoing battles that I think that are playing out before us right now. And the one that I think is most important is a place called Bakhmut. And it's been a place where, and I've been on media talking about this in other networks, and people may have seen me. I was on with a British guy just recently, and he was talking. He's like, oh, no, Bakhmut, the battle there has been going on for almost 2 months, and the Ukrainians are winning because they're being able to bleed out the Russians. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't see it that way. I see it the other way. It's like, Russia right now is in a war of attrition, and this place is a meeting engagement where it will whoever wins it will likely have dominance within the region in which they're trying to basically create conditions for a larger military effort to go forward. So Bakhmut is essentially it's like depends on one's perspective, but one could say it's either being a place where the Ukrainians are just bleeding out the Russians, or the Russians are just simply biding their time and let the Ukraine throw all their combat power into that one location. So at a time where they're choosing and go back on the offensive. And I believe the latter. I think this is a place where the Russians are just letting the Ukrainians pound away, just use their force, and then they're getting ready for this larger offensive, which by all accounts that I find credible, the Russians are getting ready to launch within any day now because they've got these 600,000 troops ready to go.
You are very pessimistic on the chances of Ukraine actually pushing Russia out. What would it take? What would it take for them to do that? I mean, if we try to put a little more positive, positive look at the future.
Yeah, numbers. I don't agree with some who are saying, oh, the Russians win Ukraine, they're going to move into Poland. They don't have that kind of power. But right now, Rick, just looking, if someone just runs the numbers, the Russians have overwhelming military forces. They've got probably 1 million men deployed within the region preparing for operations. There's no such reserve available to Ukraine. And that's why you hear all the talk of all the high-tech weapons, F-16. Everybody believes somehow that these weapons are going to be the magic bullet to stop Putin. It's just not so. To win a war, you need leadership. And what I've said and others I think are saying too, If you're going to instruct and help Ukraine to win, you got to do it. You can't be talking about 10, 20 tanks. You got to be talking about hundreds of thousands. If you're going to be actually helping stop the onslaught of thousands of troops, you got to be figuring out a way to get more troops in there because troops hold ground. And so I'm just looking at this from historic perspectives, talking to those who actually monitor specific details. And it's just not in the cards. And then you add to that the promises of support that ain't going to be there in time for the spring offensive. So I'm looking at it as practically as I can. I can't sugarcoat things. I'm not a cheerleader. I simply try to examine facts and explain them in ways people can understand. That's what I see.
So I think there's somewhat of a global consensus that the war has not gone as Vladimir Putin had expected it to. I think many people thought that Ukraine would fall within a week. So
yes.
Vladimir Putin's got a little bit of a PR problem here. So on Tuesday, He announces Russia's suspension of its participation in the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, known as the START Treaty. So notice it's suspension. Is the language he's using is suspension, not like I'm formally withdrawal. Is this just simply a little bluster to make him look a little tougher?
No, this is where we, again, let me be very clear on this too. This is another failure of the Biden administration. For years, the Russians have been dancing around and violating treaties. That's why Mike Pompeo and President Trump pulled us out of the INF, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Treaty, because it didn't benefit us, and the Russians and Chinese were not abiding by any of this. We should have pulled out first. We should have said, because of the conditions you just outlined, because of Putin's bad actions, we're out of here. And until Putin decides he's going to start acting better, we're not coming back. That's why the Chinese jumped in, too. The Chinese have also jumped into this malaise by yesterday announcing their 12-step peace process plan. Rick, we knew, the Biden administration knew that was coming last week, and they did nothing to even get ahead of it. So this is what I'm talking about. They don't anticipate, they don't jump in front of things, they don't actually get out there and take the wind out of things, because the very way you just offered your commentary shows that Putin, even though he has a problem, is the guy who did something. That's a problem with Biden. So as much as anything else, we should have said, yeah, you've been violating this a long time. We're out of here. You're conducting operations which harm people, and those are war crimes. You need to be held accountable. We're not doing that. It's always one step behind. That's why Biden was not able to deter Putin, and that's why right now I'd like to believe they've learned their lesson. That's why they're stepping things up a little bit in Taiwan to try to deter China from doing something over there. So.
All right. Help me understand the headline. China urges for the end of Russia's invasion of Ukraine as it calls for a ceasefire and peace talks. Beijing releases 12-point plan to solve conflict on eve of the anniversary of Putin's war. But at the same time, there is all this talk of China actually potentially aiding the Russians in the war in Ukraine. So is this simply just a PR cover thing that China is offering, or is there something serious behind this?
There's large cargo aircraft flying out of China to Russia every day with lethal support. Another thing Biden is ignoring, because they don't want to hold China account. So that's another thing, Rick, going, you know, against what Biden is saying. So we know this. They're already doing it. This is simply a PR campaign for purposes of allowing China to dominate the globe regarding perception. They want to be seen, and they did this to be seen as the adult in the room trying to navigate and be reasonable. That's why they did it. And that's why I'm saying the Biden administration, if some knucklehead there is listening right now, they need to be listening to the fact that they screwed this up by the fact that they knew this was coming, they could have got ahead of it, and they could have said something to take the wind out of the sails of the Chinese. Instead, the Chinese have now put something out showing that they're the adults in the room and nothing that, you know, we're the ones really trying to be reasonable here. Again, taking away the strategic power of the United States, which has traditionally been there regarding our efforts to be the adult in the room and navigate and negotiate things to end. So that's what's going on here, is all PR.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the way this story reads, and this is a story that was covered in the Daily Mail, UK, that's a global news outlet.
It is.
China's foreign ministry said on Thursday, conflict and war benefit no one. The call for peace talks come on the eve of the first anniversary. Chinese foreign ministry called for a ceasefire and peace talks as the country pushed for the end of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I mean, that is the perfect press release. That is the perfect smokescreen.
Yeah. Exactly. So, no, they're already giving lethal support. We know it. Biden is pretending that they don't know it because they want to. They somehow believe being nice to China is going to make China be more friendly to us and on our side. They're not. The Chinese want to see the current Western global order removed. They want to replace it. This is part of their plan. So the more Biden plays nice and pretends they don't know that the Chinese are giving lethal aid to Russia, the more that helps Russia and hurts Ukraine. The more that Biden decides to not be ahead of these things and reacts instead of prepares and responds and tries to take the high ground, you're going to see China take and gain global opinion that they're the ones who need to be looked at as the global leader, not us. So it's all bad across the board. I wish I had better news.
Symptomatic of just sort of the Biden administration handling of so many different issues. I mean, the southern border, East Palestine, it's all reaction. And, you know, well,
and bad
reaction. Not even.
Yeah, bad reaction.
Or no action on the southern border. Yeah. I mean, either there's late action or no action. And, you know, you would think that somebody over there would get out in front on some of this stuff, as you say. It's
Rick, it's a policy of reaction and failure. They can't be this, can I say stupid? They can't be this stupid because, I mean, I know people who are trying to advise them, and a lot of the things we're talking about, they get the advice and they ignore it or go the other way. So something's wrong, just saying.
Thought to Action Podcast, what are you talking about this weekend?
So we're actually doing some interesting things with Jerry Corsi coming up. And also I had a knockdown, drag-out, wonderful interview with my friend Adam Baldwin, the good Baldwin, not Alec Baldwin, just saying. Not that there's anything wrong with. But anyway, so Adam, who was a star of Full Metal Jacket, he and I had a good session. So that's coming out here soon. You'll see it on our websites very soon. So that's coming up this next week.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action Podcast at LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you.
Thank you.
7:47, Saturday morning update. Coming up next, we'll talk with KT McFarland, CPAC on the way, and we will have a preview for you. But first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I looked at the cameras in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. I got some really good news for you. There isn't any crashes and no construction being set up. You're at speed both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Now into Prince George's County. First, if you're traveling between the two beltways, either on the BW Parkway or 95, set your cruise control lanes to clear north and south. Also in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound lanes are clear. And at the Bay Bridge, you got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend with a little bit of light rain and snow possible mid-morning to early afternoon. A coating in the grass, not out of the question, but no real big issues for the roadways. The only concern, higher elevations out west. Highs today only in the upper 30s. Tonight, cold, maybe some patchy fog in spots. Tomorrow, back into some sunshine, mid and upper 50s to near 60. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff.
31 degrees in the nation's capital at 7:48. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, former Deputy National Security Advisor for President Trump, and a board member of the American Conservative Union. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
And, of course, the American Conservative Union, the sponsor of CPAC. It's coming to Washington. Wow, it hadn't been in Washington for a couple of years, KT.
Yeah, not since COVID. I mean, the last time it was in Washington was February of 2020, and COVID has just started percolating as an issue. In fact, when we were in Washington, it turned out that Patient Zero, you know, the man who was a longtime conservative action person, he was attending CPAC, shook a lot of hands, so a lot of us were in quarantine for a couple of weeks after our handshake with him. But in any event, we're back in Washington. I'd been in Orlando for 2 years, and then various regional CPACs around the country. But it's an amazing time to come to CPAC this time around, more than I think other times, because there's a large bench of people who are either currently declared or about to declare for president, and they're almost all going to be there. So to go to this conference, you see one after another. It's almost like going to a wine tasting, you know, where you see this candidate and that candidate. Even though they're not declared, and maybe they're not going to talk about their presidential ambitions, maybe, but you get a measure of them, and you can shake their hands, and you can meet them and look in their eye, and you can really compare them one against another. Who looks good to you? Who do you like what he's going to say? Who do you think would be a strong presidential candidate? And then I think the other thing, and the focus this year is going to be on what elected Ronald Reagan. That sort of three-legged stool of conservatism. So on one hand, you have the national security conservatives, that's me. You have economic pro-growth conservatives. And then you have, in this case, the anti-woke conservatives, the social conservatives. And everybody will be there to talk about it. And even though there's some disagreement within the national security world about the approach to, really it's the extent of our commitment to Ukraine, not whether we should be involved. It's just really the extent and the degree of our support. But there's an amazing amount of unity of the other key issues, you know, the anti-woke agenda, energy independence, the need for economic growth, standing up to China as the major strategic threat to American peace and prosperity. And then overarching all of it is this anti-big government, bureaucratic overreach, sort of populist wing of the party. So if you really want to know what's going to happen to the Republican Party in the next year or two, and you want to know who's going to be leading it, not only the individuals, but the ideas, you should come to CPAC.
Well, it's like the Super Bowl of conservative politics and the conservative movement. And it's CPAC, of course, the Conservative Political Action Conference. And what I thought was interesting, KT, is it's not just the American Conservative Union, but it brings together hundreds of different conservative organizations.
Yeah, this is like the mothership. And all of the conservative groups come to it, show up, have a booth, have a sponsorship, they speak. So it's, everybody's there, and they're all in one place. And if you care about these issues, it's a great place to see kind of everybody all at once. It's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty efficient organization in that regard. But the other thing that's happened over the last few years, which we were quite surprised at, I'm on the board of CPAC, as you pointed out, but over the last couple of years, we have had conservatives, Tory Party, the equivalent Republican parties of countries all around the world come to us and say, look, we've looked at your model. You know, for the last 15 years, it's CPAC, the conference itself and the organization, which has really created a whole movement in the United States that ultimately elected Donald Trump and is probably going to elect the next president. But it's the same movement that Ronald Reagan started. And they're saying, how can we do that in our country? So we've gone around the world in the last few years having conferences in Japan and Korea and Australia and some European countries, some South American countries, where we're they're trying to replicate the success, the sort of mothership conservative success that CPAC has had in the United States. And as a result of that, a number of people from abroad, from the equivalent of the Republican or conservative or Tory parties from abroad, are coming. I can't confirm at this point some names because we're still waiting to get the details, but there will be several former and current heads of state from Europe and South America, as well as some political leaders from these countries.
And it all starts on Wednesday. And tell us a little bit about the last year at CPAC, the whole role of Ukraine and the Russian invasion, how that played last year and how it will play this year.
Okay, well, the interesting thing last year was that it was in Orlando, and I had predicted months before, you know, by the time CPAC rolls around, end of February, early March, we're probably going to see Russia doing something with Ukraine. So we were prepared, but we were not prepared for exactly how the extent of what happened. But when Russia invaded Ukraine, all of a sudden the media is clamoring for people to, how do you explain it? What's going on? What's the future of this? How's it going to play out? And everybody they wanted to talk to, the media was already there covering CPAC, but so were all the people they wanted to talk to. And so it was a great exposure of suddenly all in one place, all the people who were the thought leaders on national security. But in addition, a lot of us were then able to sort of, in the wings of everything, talk about it. So it was former senior officials, you know, potential future officials, and we were all able to sort of huddle together and bounce ideas off of each other. So it became a really important sort of war room, if you will, for how do Republicans, how do conservatives deal with this national security crisis. I think we're heading to a period like that again. Now, maybe not by Wednesday, but China, Russia, Ukraine, all these issues are on the move, and there's a lot of moving around of the global chess pieces right now. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing, getting together with a lot of the sort of thought leaders of the conservative movement, the national security foreign policy movement, to see what everybody's thoughts are and to share some ideas. So stay tuned. You know, last year was Ukraine. Who knows what it is next week?
And I think the other thing that's so impressive about CPAC is the number of young conservatives that gather and the energy that they show. And they are motivated after this to just go out into the field across the country and now around the world.
Yeah, there's a huge grassroots movement. And it is young people who are probably on their own college campuses are probably afraid to even speak out. But they come to this. We teach them the skills of how to be an advocate in your own community. And then, you know, go forth and multiply. And that's what happened during the Reagan Revolution when I was, you know, a young person going to CPAC 1,000 years ago. But I think it's, we're in that same period now where people are looking for different answers than what our current administration is giving us or what Washington is giving. And so that's why it's really, the energy of CPAC is just awesome. It's like a huge football game, pep rally, among other things all thrown together. So even if you're kind of old and jaded about these issues, it's awesome to go to CPAC and get inspired by a lot of enthusiastic 20-year-olds.
And I think the website address is probably one of the best. What would you recommend as the best website address to find out more and to get tickets to CPAC?
That's a good question. I think just go, you know, just put in your Google on CPAC 2023. It'll tell you everything you need to know.
Conservative.org will take you there and events.cpac.org. But I love the conservative.org.
Any of those work. We just want you to come. We don't care how you get there.
Conservative.org has got to be a great, great, great website address. That's fabulous. KT, thank you so much. And a quick preview of what you'll be discussing.
Well, I'm going to talk on Thursday about the foreign policy, sort of overview of the big picture items that we have to worry about. I think the focus should be on China as well as all the others. And I'll have various other roles during the week. And then on Saturday, I'll do a wrap-up of what all the national security people have talked about. You know, is the open border, China, Russia, the energy security, and try to pull it all together in the final hours of CPAC.
Oh, that's great. And, of course, WMAL will be there live. We'll have full coverage of CPAC this year. And, KT, as always, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be watching for you.
Can't wait. Thank you so much. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and, of course, a board member of the American Conservative Union. And that's going to wrap it up for the Saturday morning update. Heather Curtis has the news next and Garden Sense at 1 this afternoon.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.